Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Came running down the hall. Now I'm a little out of breath. Just broke the first rule of radio. We're live, 18 stories above downtown Chicago in the Skyline Studios. Thanks for tuning in. I will be here with you until 3 o'clock. We appreciate you tuning in. The news click at WGNRadio.com, our daily web poll question. I post it on my Facebook page. Like me at WGN King John was, next time I dine out, I'm more likely, less likely, or as likely to eat a Buffalo Wild Wings. There's the fallout of that. 51% said I'm less likely. 46% said as likely. And 2%, there's always about 2% that just make no sense, say I'm more likely to choose Buffalo Wild Wings. In our news, we just said that the people have been fired that were part of that decision to ask the basketball players and their parents of color to move to a different part of the restaurant. Eventually, they just left the restaurant because there was a racist in the restaurant and the white guy didn't want the black people next to him. So they had to move. They said that the people responsible for that decision have been fired. When we talked to one of the dads yesterday who was in that group, he reminded us that the host of the restaurant who first told them, hey, there's a racist over there and he doesn't want you people sitting next to him, was himself a young black man. And they said they weren't really so mad at him. I don't mean to overstate what they told me, but my recollection of this was, I mean, we spoke about it specifically, was that he was part of the corporate culture there. They were accommodating this guy rather than accommodating them. And he didn't have the tools or the authority to fix it, and so they didn't think that he was the problem, even though he was relaying the bad information. I mean, he's a black man himself, and he was telling them that they were going to accommodate the racist. That makes no sense. And I don't know if that young man has been fired from his job or if he should be. I don't know what the answer to that one is. Incidentally, Eddie Johnson, it sounds like, is going to very soon no longer be the superintendent of the Chicago Police. And as I was talking to Steve a little while ago, I said it'll be a shame if part of his legacy or the last thing people remember from him is that, well, yeah, when they found him asleep at the wheel after having had a couple of drinks, they let him go, but then he quit because he didn't want to suffer the consequences of that. Eddie Johnson said, well, let's go ahead and launch an internal investigation, and so that is ongoing. The mayor's sort of shrugging her shoulders about it. She said, literally, he's an adult, as though it's okay to drink and drive when you're an adult. But it is okay to drink and drive if you're not drunk. So what was he? And so many people, it seems to me, have made up their mind that Eddie Johnson was drunk and asleep at the wheel, and that when the cops came up to him in October at 12:30 in the morning, they gave him a pass. Now, they did do this. He's asleep at the wheel. He's at a stop sign. The cops come up and realize that it's the superintendent. He said, well, my blood pressure medication is messed up. And they let him drive home. I suppose that thing happens all the time. It shouldn't, but I don't feel real alarmed about that. That whole dynamic, that whole scene I just described. He's asleep at a stop sign. He says his medication's messed up. He's the superintendent of one of the largest police forces in the world. And the guys in the squad come up to him and realize who he is, and they let him drive home. They did not give him a field sobriety test. They should have. But I'm not shocked to discover that they didn't. And I'm just holding out that it's plausible what Eddie Johnson was telling them. I mean, the guy has had a history of passing out. He's had kidney disease for years. He recently was the recipient of a kidney from his son. He's on blood pressure medication. which, depending on how he manages it, has given him issues in the past.
Okay, so I'm just going to say this because it happened. And, you know, I'm no doctor. It might be a fluke or whatever.
That's what I'm wondering.
He was here with his son to talk about that transplant earlier, a couple days before the event.
Yeah.
And I ran into him in the hallway, that's all. And I came in the newsroom, and it's not that something that I just noticed, but I said it to the people here. I said, he does not look right. There was just something about his color or his demeanor that just didn't look healthy.
Eddie Johnson's health.
And whatever. That may or may not be related, but I felt I noticed it enough to actually say it out loud to other people I saw.
Steve, we reached out to a couple of major medical providers in the Chicago area to comment on this. Not about Eddie Johnson's case per se, but if you're on high blood pressure medication, if you've had kidney issues, if you're the recipient of or the donor of a kidney, is it plausible that you might, after a beer or two, at 12:30 in the morning, find yourself faint? Nobody wants to talk to us about that.
Well, didn't he say he forgot to take a dose?
Right.
I can't speak to high blood pressure medication, but I have taken medication that if you miss a dose, you become so disoriented, it is almost difficult to function normally.
I don't know about that, but if that's the case, I'm willing to believe it. I'm willing to believe that.
I think, you know, if you're going to call an investigation into yourself, you're pretty confident that, you know, you weren't doing anything illegal on purpose, for sure.
Or, and here's the cynic in me, and this is me playing a cynic, I'm not even very good at it, but you know that you'll get away with it. You're willing to call an investigation because you're Eddie Flippin' Johnson, and we'll manage this thing, don't you worry.
I mean, that's highly possible. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy, but, you know, people can say that about Ted Bundy. So,
well, people can say that about the cops that investigated the Laquan McDonald
shooting. Yeah.
I mean, the Chicago Police Department does have a history of taking care of its own. So, I don't, you know, there's a lot of things going on here. But at the end of the day, this is the only point I'm making. It seems to me to be reasonable. You and I weren't there. That, given Eddie Johnson's history, yeah, he passed out a couple of times. Once at a ceremony, just boom. It's conceivable to me that at 12:30 in the morning, driving a car, he'd pull up to a stop sign, lean into his steering wheel, and fall asleep. Mike, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. Good afternoon. It's really irresponsible of anybody, whether it's the police superintendent of Chicago or anyone who is sick to that degree, to be drinking. It's ridiculous. I think it's... Especially, well, if you want to take it to that level or to that point, what is he, how responsible of him to, A, number one, be doing that to himself and to his health, and also to be driving afterwards, given his history, like as if you just said, it's really stupid, really stupid.
I agree with you on that. Yeah, that was a bad decision. Thanks for the phone call. I think what we're wondering is, some people are assuming that he got a pass for DUI there. And I don't know, I don't think that you and I know that to be the case. Frank wanted to say something, too, about yesterday's show. Hey, Frank, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. I know we're going backwards in topics, but there's been a lot of talk about reprimanding the customer from Buffalo Wild Wings. The managers were the ones that actually approved accommodating this so-called regular patron to Buffalo Wild Wings. And I don't know, did the managers say, yeah, you know, this guy, he spends $500 here a week on alcohol, so we better accommodate him. Instead of banning, well, in addition to banning the customer, these managers should be spotlighted. And they should never be able to visit another Buffalo Wild Wings from this day forward.
That's a good point.
The managers, what about the managers that they're the one who actually accommodated this guy?
That's an interesting point. It's like, we know there's evil in the world, but sometimes the worst of it is the people that aid and abet them, those of us who you think would know better.
And we don't know if this guy was intoxicated or borderline intoxicated when he made this request.
I don't know that that changes the story, does it?
No, it doesn't, but it should be the decision of the managers to say, no, we're not going to accommodate you,
right, right,
regardless how much you spend here every week, or to say, you know, what you're doing is wrong and we don't want you here from this day forward.
Right.
The managers
right.
should be the one exposed also.
Interesting point. Thanks for the phone call. I'm glad you listened yesterday. And like I said, I don't think we've heard the last of this story. I just think it's such a bizarre, it must have been a bizarre predicament. What a weird workplace it was if the black host at that restaurant knows that one of their regular and evidently valued customers, the guy everybody likes to laugh with at the bar, it sounds like, is this known racist. And there you are, the host, and you're black. And now here comes 18 people in a youth basketball team with their parents, they're African American, and now you've got to run interference? I mean, I get obviously that person did not handle that well, but I think if you just consider the dynamics of that, you realize this is putting that person in a really difficult situation who's just trying to get the onion rings out of the kitchen on time.
Well, you know, not to mention if this regular is a known racist, even if he's the only African-American working there, that is extremely unfair.
Absolutely.
To be forced to work in an environment where
Absolutely.
That person is welcome there.
I've been thinking about that guy a lot lately. I mean, obviously, he's not the victim here. It's those kids. It's those families. They've got an attorney. You haven't heard the end of this. But just what a weird world that was for that kid working there. That kid. I don't know if he was 19 or 29.
Right.
But they did identify him as a black male, and I'm going to assume that he's not 58. So whatever the age of that person is, what a bizarre work situation that was. I was also following the story in the Daily Herald about what's going on in Arlington Heights. Arlington Heights, another one of the suburbs or cities in the Chicagoland area that has said, yes, we want revenue from legal pot sales. And then January 1st is, as you know, right around the corner, what with it being November 6th and all. And they went, yeah, we're not so sure now. Which is exactly the way I, maybe you, have reacted to this story all along. Once upon a time when we thought, oh, it's silly to keep locking up people for pot. It's racially divisive. It's a bad use of resources. A lot of people with pot are just smoking pot. They're not bad people. And yet there they are now finding themselves in a world of trouble because they were just stupid enough to be smoking pot. Well, now we said it's legal. So now the question, and so a lot of us said, aha, justice is served. And then the closer you get to it, you realize, well, my kids will be close to being able to get that stuff the way we used to get beer, and you're just not so easy with it. So now whole towns are starting to flip on their decision about this the same way I have been. I'm less enthusiastic about this now as we get closer to January 1st. So there's Arlington Heights, which at first said, yeah, we want it. And now they've voted to keep their town dry, if you will. Even though they already have a dispensary, they won't allow recreational marijuana sales in their village. And I can appreciate that quandary. They were told that they'll make $500,000 if they allow it. But they're not so sure that's true. One of the aldermen over there, whatever you call it, village trustees, said, well, let's go ahead and do it for a year. Let's just do it on a trial basis. It doesn't appear that's going to happen either. They're just going to not allow it. People in Arlington Heights will find a way to get it in nearby towns. So a lot of towns are doing that. I mean, I don't know what the town is nearest them. There's a bunch of them, but all of those people could be the firecrackers of Indiana to Arlington Heights, and you just drive across the line.
I know I got a thumbs up in Deerfield this week, and there were a lot, they're very heated feelings on either side of it there, too.
So did you see the story, too, just speaking of where you do and don't do pot in Illinois after the 1st of January, in the Chicago public housing projects, you will not be able to smoke marijuana or consume marijuana in any form legally after January 1st for the same reason that you can't put the money that you make from your store in a bank because it's against federal law. And those are federal subsidies for the CHA tenants. So there's 60-plus thousand of these people. You in your apartment, you can smoke marijuana. Me in my condo, we can do the consumables. People in the suburbs, they'll be able to smoke marijuana. But the people in CHA apartment buildings will not be able to because that's a federal program.
Well, Okay, there's that. But I think a lot of people who live in apartments aren't going to be able to smoke it either, John.
I'm wondering about that, too.
No, I'm pretty sure. If it's just,
That was how it was in Oregon.
Apartments are smoke-free if it's a cigarette-free, a tobacco-free apartment building.
That's my point. Not all of them are. I mean, in my condo, we have tobacco users. Smokers sounds so dirty. You're a tobacco user. You've chosen to use tobacco. That is permitted in my building. Not in the common areas, I guess, but somebody's smoking up there. So will they be able to smoke marijuana? I think the answer is yes. Would you allow them to do it in the common area around your complex? You probably don't want people smoking pot there. I don't know. Those are the rules that have to be decided. I'm wondering what your thoughts about that are. Do you want to be able to smoke or allow people to smoke in your apartment or condo? If your association allows it, my understanding is then you can. Tenants won't be able to in the CHA. Okay, I'll pause here. It's your turn. 312-981-7200. Jump in, please. All our phone lines are lit, as it were. All right, let's talk to Bill. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Yeah, I was sort of at another station talking about the CHA. You know, if you're caught, you can be kicked out of the CHA project.
Yeah.
And they're talking about all the homeless people. What about, it's also a government project. They said, too, the people are on Section 8. If you're renting a house or apartment, you're Section 8 and you're caught. That's a government program, too. You'd be kicked out there, too. So how many homeless people are going to run around the streets?
I don't know what's going to happen to the homeless people, but it just seems to me like if you have Section 8 housing, say it's a townhouse, say it's something that's not a giant apartment complex that's already smoke-free. If it's smoke-free, you can't smoke. You can't smoke anything. I understand that, but I think that people that are in those federal subsidy programs should be treated the same way everybody else does. And if your building allows it, I think you should be allowed to do it. Deborah, you're on WGN. And by the way, it's not just smoking. I mean, literally, they wouldn't even be able to have an edible. Deborah, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Hi, King John. Hey. A longtime listener. I live in Arlington Heights. I am disabled. I live in disabled CHA housing here. There is no smoking. There's a sign right by our front door that says no smoking on this property. In this building, it's a smoke-free building. As soon as the weather gets cold, everybody closes their window, and they do smoke. Any time of the night, you can smell marijuana throughout. I have really no problem with people smoking marijuana. If they are veterans, which I have veterans in my building, and I'm disabled. I don't smoke it. But there's people that are in severe pain that live in this building. We are disabled. We are low income because of our I got it by a drunk driver from Poland.
Hold on a second, Deborah. Hey, Deborah, hold on. Hold on a second. So should they or should they not be able to smoke in your building?
They should not, but it's not enforced.
I got you. I appreciate your phone call. I'm short of time. Jacob supports smoking in the house because it's safer to do it there. I get that, Jacob. Thank you for your phone call. And just one other one here. John, about 10 years ago, this is Eddie Johnson and our reaction to drugs and stuff. About 10 years ago, my cardiologist changed my blood pressure medicine. After 3 days, it knocked me out to the point where I had to pull into a grocery store parking lot to sleep for about a half an hour. Then I had it changed, and I've been fine since. So the Eddie Johnson version of that story is possible.
Before we were even seated, the host asked me what my race was. My response was, why does that matter? He said that we have a regular customer that is sitting near where we're going to set you up, and he is knowingly a racist.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to sit around black people.
Literally, did he use the word racist?
Yes, he didn't say there's somebody, like an angry customer or upset. He used the word racist.
The person you were having this conversation with, describe that person to me.
So he was a young black male. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things. Yeah, he was a young black male.
It's worth a replay, isn't it? So there's the guy at the Buffalo Wild Wings on our show yesterday identifying the host as not only a black male, but a young black male. Lauren, we were wondering about that. Like, what was the nature of that part of the story? We heard it yesterday. I didn't remember him saying that he was also a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can completely see that. Talk about a harsh work environment for that young black man.
Right. He should not have to be subjugated to a environment where he doesn't feel safe or comfortable while he's working because of a customer that comes in regularly.
So this group of 18 people come in, they experience that work environment once. That guy goes there every day. That's his paycheck.
And what's sad is it almost sounds like he was saying it as if it was normal. Yeah. And that's completely unacceptable.
You know, the story they told us yesterday was that then in between the 45 minutes, while this is all shaking down, some of the staff is over there talking to the regular guy at the bar, the bigot, and they're all joking around and getting back to him with how we're managing this situation. What a strange situation. So I appreciate everybody that took the time to come on our show yesterday and talk a little bit about that, including the mayor of Naperville. You knew the I sort of tippy-toed around the topic, but at the end of our conversation, Naperville reputation is a great place to be, but also a town that is very white. Now, the mayor pointed out to us that it's now 69% white, 31% identifies as not Caucasian, but principally Asian, not African-American. But towns get reputations, deservedly or otherwise. Chicago is not as violent as the rest of the world thinks. But we have that reputation, and it's going to be a long time before we shake it. And this just reminds people of their perception of Naperville. And it's not the only time that there's been a bizarre racial incident captured either on a still photograph or on video in the last couple of years out there. So, of course, the Tribune has that story. We talked about that yesterday on our show, too. Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Wednesdays, he joins us about this time to talk about the restaurant scene in the Chicago area. Hi, Phil Vitale. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good.
By the way, Phil, you're the restaurant critic. That's not exactly a restaurant story, but it happened at a Buffalo Wild Wings. Do you have any wisdom about that story that we've been talking about this week?
No, I mean putting the best possible face on it for the manager who's I'm understanding is now out of a job is that he and the staff were trying their best to defuse the situation. Like if they tell the racist, well, no, you don't get to decide who sits next to you or something like that. Maybe they're afraid he's going to start yelling something and escalate the situation. They handled it all wrong.
What should the corporation do? What should the company do?
Well, the company has to, so far what they did, they fired everyone who failed to handle this properly. They apparently have told that customer he is not welcome in any Buffalo Wild Wings store, any place, any time for the rest of his natural life. They said all the right things about we do not tolerate this, we want to be inclusive, we want to be something like that. I mean, the request from this guy is so outrageous. I bet I would have, if in that person's shoes, I probably would have been stunned too. Someone said, could you move that couple? I really don't want to store that party. I really don't want to sit next to blank people. And I'd be, what? What year is this?
That's interesting because either that's what they were telling us yesterday was like, even the people in the party themselves, knowing that's what they're now walking into, were so stunned by what's happening that they didn't turn on their heel and walk out. They're like, wait a minute, what? As they're sitting down still trying to get their head around it.
Exactly. Did I walk into a time machine? Where the hell am I?
I know, exactly.
It's horrifying. I mean, I can't imagine what is in the heart and mind of someone who would make that sort of request. I don't want to sit next to loud people. I can say that. I don't want to sit next to crying people if I can avoid it. But to sit there and call someone over to your table, if you're uncomfortable, what you say is you make some kind of face-saving request. Is it okay if I switch seats?
Yeah.
That's what you say.
Hey, listen, there's a big party over there, and whatever's in your heart, you don't have to announce it. Just say, I'm going to go to a quieter part of the restaurant. I'll sit on the other side of the bar.
Right. I'll sit at the bar.
Yeah.
I'll sit behind the bar. I'll sit under the bar. Just, I will keep my issues to myself.
I will go to Hooters.
I'm not going to make you respond to my issue and give you put you in a horrible, horrible situation.
Well, I think a lot of people are wondering, who is this mystery man? He's out there somewhere. He's probably listening to the radio.
That's right.
I don't know if he's like feeling guilty about this or if he's like, hell yeah. I don't know what his attitude is.
I almost don't want to find out.
630, just one last thing about this. Phil texted in and said, John, the managers were fired. What that guy didn't want was screaming little kids next to him, and everybody mistook that for being, you don't want us near you because you're black. But that was not the case. 630, you can believe that if you want, but that's not the way anyone is telling the story. That just has no basis in fact. Even so,
and I have seen that argument several times on social media.
It's what I assumed people... the first time I heard it, Phil. The first time I was hoping that it was, okay, those are black people, but what it really is it's 18 of them, and 12 of them are little basketball players. I don't want to sit next to little basketball players of any stripe anytime at a restaurant. And if you happen to be black, well, I still don't want to sit next to you, but it's not because you're black. It's because you're a basketball team. So
I suppose. But who goes into Buffalo Wild Wings saying, what I really don't want to see is a large group of sports fans in here? You saw the sign out front, right? You've seen the commercials.
And besides,
that's their bread and butter.
It really is.
Watching TV and cheering along with the game. You don't go there to read a book. You don't go there for a quiet moment of reflection. You're not going to propose somewhere around the dessert course, I'm assuming. It's a sports bar. Loud, 55 TV sports bar.
What do you say in your review sometimes? It's not conversation friendly?
It's not conversation friendly. It doesn't plan to be conversation friendly.
And
anybody
who
walks in there with that expectation hasn't been paying attention.
One last thing about this, and that is the notion that it was a mistaken identity thing. It wasn't the race, it was the volume of the kids. But remember, the very first interaction that the restaurant had with the group wasn't, hey, you're a large group, can we put you in a corner where nobody else is? It was, there's a racist here, and he doesn't want to sit next to you. They owned it before they even sat down. The host says, that guy's a racist. He doesn't want to sit next to you. So there's no evidence that it was anything but that. That's all we got. You can't fix it.
Right.
How are you, Phil?
As my outrage ebbs, I'm fine.
Yeah. Let's take a deep breath. Talk about what you want to talk about. Are there good Mexican restaurants in Chicago, Phil Vitale?
One or two, three or four, nine or ten, yeah. We're real good at that in Chicago, I'm glad to say.
Yeah.
And today's review is of one of them.
Zucco, is that how you pronounce T Z U C O?
Zucco.
Zucco.
Right. It's actually half the name of a city, of a town in Mexico. The full name is Huitzuco, and it's where the chef was born.
I see. So we've got this place. Carlos Gayton, is that the chef we're talking about?
Yes, and he had a restaurant on Chicago Avenue in Westtown called Mexique, which had a very nice 10-year run before it had to close. And he went back to Mexico for a brief bit where he has a restaurant in a nice resort on the near Playa del Carmen, which just got 5 diamonds from AAA. So this guy knows his stuff, but he wanted to get back to Chicago, and luckily for us, he made it happen. And he's up there. He's out here in River North doing exceptionally thoughtful food. His vision is Mexican food, but a lot of his training is French. So many of the dishes have a little bit of both to it, certainly in the way he plates things and like that. It's really, I mean, he'll do an octopus, and it'll have the kind of seasoning you'd expect for Mexico. But then alongside of it is a potato, carrots, and peas in a tuna aioli, which could have come from Provence.
So this is a guy who has earned a Michelin star before, and you think he's going to be due for one. You give it 3 stars. It's at 720 North State Street, so not too far from where I am, actually, just west, and then a little bit north. It's downtown Chicago, if you will.
Yep, it's the old Roy's place.
Zucco, and you say, here's just a couple of lines from you to you. It boasts a primitive, contemporary look, made of wood fabrics, dried plants, and other materials, all sourced from his hometown in Mexico. You say the steak tartare, if you are thinking about things to start with, formed atop a disc of guacamole, steak tartare, atop a disc of guacamole topped with a lightly poached egg and enlivened with pickled cauliflower and chipotle aioli was a star appetizer before, and that's still in his restaurant. You like the mussels, you like the spreads and bread, an assortment of breads and things to put on them. Fine, you said ceviches, a couple of those. But when we get to the main entrees, you say braised short ribs are rich and tender. Who doesn't love braised short ribs? Although I don't think of that as a Mexican dish, but here we go again, huh?
Exactly, exactly. It's a good protein. It's one that becomes almost ubiquitous in Chicago when the cold weather arrives, which it has at least today, because it's just a great cold weather dish. It's kind of nurturing. It's kind of a gourmet pot roast, if you will. It's just really delicious and sticks to your ribs, as my mom used to say.
773 just texted in. Hey, I'm going to Playa del Carmen over Christmas break. What's the name of that restaurant that Phil just mentioned?
The name of the restaurant is Ha. Letter H followed by a small letter A.
Ha?
And it's in a resort on the Riviera Maya, which is what you pass by on your way to Playa del Carmen. It's in between Playa and Cancun. And you'll find it. Just look it up. H-A.
I wonder if Ha Ha Dix of the Chicago Bears has been there. And then you'd say, hey, Ha Ha, where did you go? And he'd say, Ha. And you go, yeah, where did you go? And you could do that for hours.
Yes, yes, Abbott and Costello at the same time.
All right, let's do this. So one more time now, the name of this restaurant is called Zucco, T-Z-U-C-O. You're listening to 720 WGN. It's at 720 North State. That's a nice memory crutch for you and me if you like Mexican with a French twist. All right, Phil's Flash Fry, some restaurants and some tidbits that you need to know that you've either asked in the past or you can ask right now. Our number's 312-981-7200. Call or text the restaurant critic at the Tribune, Phil Vitale.
I'm going to feed around my vegetables. I'm going to chop down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite.
All right, Phil, here we go. This is the segment whose introduction is usually longer than the segment. It's not always well planned by me, to be honest with you. Let's do this, Phil. There were some that came in last week and some that we've got this week. People just asking questions or making comments for your reaction. What should we start with? You've got some from last week, right, Phil?
Right. I wrote them down. Someone asked, please, Phil, what is the name of the cookbook you spoke with Dean Richards about a couple of Sundays ago? It included Orion Samuelson's Baked Beans. And my first confession is Dean didn't have me on the show a couple of weeks ago, so that wasn't me talking. I really like the show, but it wasn't me.
Right.
My best guess, Orion's got a new book out called, it's a biography called You Can't Dream Big Enough. It says autobiography, and that sounds like fun. But I suspect that the cookbook they must have been talking about was the WGN Radio Family Cookbook Volume 2. It came out in 2008, and it does have that recipe in there.
And I don't know where you will find that. Maybe online somebody's selling it. That happens.
I found it on Amazon.
If the price is right, I got one.
I remember we would put those together. We did it for a couple of years. We'd all give favorite recipes. And I'd say to my wife, because Brenda does the cooking at our place, I'd say, hey, Brenda, what's that Texas caviar, that sort of stuff that you put on chips when people come to our house? It's like a mix of beans and onions and vinegar, and it's really, really delicious. And she gave it to me, but she's kind of looking at me like, you know, this is my favorite recipe to serve, or one of our specialties. If we put it in the cookbook, now everybody's going to have it. So you sort of feel like you do want to share it, but by the same token, you don't want to share it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, Phil, in terms of steakhouses, how do you feel about Steak 48 on Wabash, says one of our texters?
Steak 48 comes from Arizona, hence the name, since Arizona was the 48th state to join the Union.
Ah.
And it is from the people that originated the Mastro's Steakhouse concept, which they sold a number of years ago. And now that their non-compete has expired, because there is a Mastro Steakhouse in Chicago, they have expanded their Steak 48, and it's a high-end, you know, prime or certified Angus beef steakhouse, and it's very pretty, and it's a new construction spot in River North, and it's very attractive. Some really good side dishes in there, and the steaks I've had have been very, very good.
Very, very good. Okay, that's all nice. That's all well and good. I'm sensing just a little reservation in your voice there. Like, yeah, a steak downtown Chicago is always going to be good, but there's other places you'd go before you went to Steak 48?
Possibly. I have to think about it. There are some steakhouses that really resonate with me a little better. It's, you know, it comes down to style points mostly. Most of them have access to superior beef, and most of them have very good service. And then there's some other things you might look for, like that Maple and Ash, for instance, up in the Gold Coast. That wine list and beverage cocktail program is one of the things that sort of tips it in for me.
Yeah, Maple and Ash. You've mentioned them before. You got another one on your Phil's Flash Fry list there?
We talked about no reservation spots the last couple of weeks, and how it was a big trend, and now it's a little uneven. Now it's kind of annoying when you find it. And they wanted to, and someone pointing out that, John, you always rave about Ishnala, the supper club up in Lake Delton, and they do not take reservations. People wait hours and spend lots of money on liquor while they wait.
Gosh, I did that. I spent hours waiting to get in, and I did have a couple Manhattans before we were seated.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot they don't take reservations, and you got to drive.
Well, now they're closed for this. They're closed for the winter, so they close the end of October. So see you in the spring, so you don't have to worry about it yet.
If you went there now.
Yeah, there'd be no wait.
You'd be first in line for when they open in the spring.
Exactly. And you wouldn't be spending money on cocktails because there's no one to serve you.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be spending money on cocktails. So let's do this. This is the assignment for next week, Phil. 847. We just started for Christmas to create memories instead of collecting things. I will be taking 6 people to dinner to celebrate in the city. I'm looking for reasonable prices, Phil, $100 per person, but maybe also with something fun to do there. I'm not sure what fun to do there is, but so we're going to have, instead of spending $100 on your gift, I'm going to spend $100 for you or less on dinner for Christmas in the city. Could you give us 3 suggestions this time next week?
I think I can do that.
Yeah.
First of all, and also the restaurants who are listening right now, feel free to email me and say, pick me, and tell me why.
Pick Phil Vitale, chicagotribune.com/dining. Always a pleasure, Phil. Thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Chicken sandwich.
Here's John Williams.
Okay, that's not a big thought, but there it is. This is John, 18th Story Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. We appreciate you listening to the show. And we really like it when you call and text 312-981-7200. I was thinking about chicken sandwiches. I was listening to Steve Cochran's show this morning, and you know, the other shows at this radio station are pretty good about getting food to magically appear. Heck, Rokan has alcohol show up, for crying out loud.
That's a gift. It really is.
We've had food magically appear plenty of times.
That's also true. You pretty much could never go hungry at this station.
And by magically, you mean Elif, I told you to make sure it happens? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Elif is the fairy god producer.
Well, at least we had some sort of, well, I guess we all do. Listen to me now get defensive about that. I think the last time you rounded up food was when somebody in one of the papers in town was doing a survey of the best hamburgers in the city. Was that it, Ella?
That wasn't the last time. But I think the last time, actually, you were not here.
So Pete McMurray, I think, was in for you.
Can I just say, let's forget about the last time. What about the next time?
Yeah, how about that?
Well, we're waiting for cupcakes.
Cochran had,
yes.
Cochran, yeah. So then you got to think of a hook. Boy, talk about the tail wagging the dog. We want cupcakes. Hey, what's a conversation we can have about it on the radio to justify it?
I've had 2 dreams about cupcakes in the past month.
Whoa.
How weird is that?
Wow.
Like fancy cupcake stores.
And then did you taste them in your dream? Were you able to?
No. I was just pointing them out to other people and telling them the different flavors and how they looked and how they were decorated, but I never got to eat them. It's kind of sad.
My poor mother lost the sense of taste and smell years ago. She's still alive and well. Mom does not taste food or beverage of any kind. She has zero olfactory and taste response.
That sounds awful.
Imagine living your life without being able to do that. She told me once after that episode where she lost her taste that she had a dream about eating a strawberry. And in her dream, she could taste the strawberry. But when she awoke, she knew that that pleasure in life was gone. Thanksgiving's around the corner. Mom's not real interested in eating a lot of food. But I digress. So on Cochran's show this morning, they had these chicken sandwiches brought in for legitimate reasons, I'm sure. And the place was called Fried the Coop. As in, you know, flew the coop. This was Fried the Coop. And they had chicken sandwiches. Well, some of them were still hanging around the station. This place is in Oaklawn, 5128 West 95th. Oaklawn Fried the Coop. Wow, is that a good chicken sandwich.
Well, now, did you have the hot one? You must not have had the hot one.
I grabbed the hot one, put it in the microwave, then saw that there was mild, medium, and hot.
Right.
Took it out, put it back in the box for somebody else, and I went back to the medium intensity one.
I'm not kidding you. Steve Grzanich looked like his face was on fire. I've never. It was like this. He had this like perplexing look. Like, how can I be feeling like this right now? I've never seen it like that before. He's like, how did this happen?
So hold on. I have a question. Then, would your mom be affected by the spiciness or not?
No. No. Salt. She could eat a jar full of jalapeno peppers.
Wow.
She'd probably have some sort of physical reaction. Yeah. She might perspire, but would she taste it? No. John 630 says, Orion Samuelson's pork and beans recipe is in the WGN Radio Family Cookbook Volume 1, not Volume 2. You know, we should just drum up some of those recipes and share them on Facebook, on our Facebook page or on our individual pages. But I'm going to run by Brenda and see if she'll let me post the Texas caviar. The answer may be no. Incidentally, you had your chance. Where are we here? There was a couple of things I was going to mention before we went on to the meat and potatoes, if you will, of this half hour. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. Just a Julie Briskman, the woman who flipped the bird at the presidential motorcade in Virginia 2 years ago. You've been following any of the fallout from the elections that took place yesterday. Tuesday was an election day in parts of the country. And one of the people who got elected to essentially the county board in Virginia, in one of the counties there, in the Algonquian district in Loudoun County, is a woman named Julie Briskman. She is the lady who was riding her bike when the presidential motorcade went by. She was frustrated with the health care debate that was happening in this country. So as the president's limousine goes by, she flips the bird to the motorcade. She was elected to the county board there. Trump has a golf course in Sterling, Virginia, in her jurisdiction. So she is now the boss of the real estate that the president's golf course is on.
And she ran on the finger.
Really? Was that part of her campaign?
I think that was her central image, was that photo. And when she announced her candidacy, I think she said something like, the woman who flipped off the president is running for office.
I'd hope that she had more qualifications for the position than that.
She beat an incumbent Republican, too.
How about that? Today, Bill Taylor's transcript is being released. It's also been announced that the hearings will be public starting on Wednesday. I'm not sure if that means they're going to be televised. Steve, do you know if the hearings
will
be televised?
Oh, I'm sure they will, yes.
And the president's son, it's just getting some traction. He did this a few days ago, but more people are talking about it now, has named the alleged whistleblower, or has allegedly named the whistleblower. There's no evidence that supports it other than a website has said this is the guy, and they've traced the name of the whistleblower through some email.
It's an irrelevant thing, right? Everything the whistleblower has said has been testified to or proven publicly.
Well, it seems to be relevant to Rand Paul and Lindsey Graham.
Yeah,
and
Rand Paul, that really surprised me.
Okay, so some Republican senators do not think we should name the whistleblower. Lindsey Graham and others are all for outing the whistleblower. Seems to me like the essence of being a whistleblower is that you're able to, with protection, say something that other people will investigate and determine the truth of.
That's why there are whistleblower laws.
It seems to me it's inherent in the definition of what a whistleblower is and does. So that's at least the latest on that front. It's 2:13 on WGN. I wanted to talk a little bit, too, about what the Tribune posted today about the Chicago Cubs being broadcast starting in February. Their network is supposed to go up, and I'm just looking for my notes on. Here it is. Okay. So this is the story from Robert Chanik in the Tribune. Marquee Sports Network reached an agreement with another cable provider to carry the new Cubs TV network in February. But most pay TV subscribers will remain in the dark, at least for now, as the planned February 22nd launch nears. So you have the Chicago Cubs. You have their partners, Sinclair Broadcasting. It's a broadcasting company that owns TV stations. And they are going to form this network that you can subscribe to or that your provider can provide, just like any other channel on your cable menu there. And it'll be the Cubs Marquee Network. So you'll see their games there, extended post-game and pre-game coverage. You can see the 2016 World Series. They'll fill that channel with programming. And you're going to be charged anywhere from $4 to $9 extra dollars a month on your cable package for that. Now, it's possible. We talked to the Tribune about this earlier. It was last month. It's possible that Phil Rosenthal was telling us, not likely, but it's possible that what happened in Los Angeles could happen here. And that is Comcast Cable will say, you know what, it's just too expensive. People are going to drop cable rather than pay the extra money. So we're not even going to offer it. It will not be part of the package. Think about that. It's conceivable that you would not be able to see the Cubs in Chicago because your provider would not offer it. And if that sounds crazy, remember that's the reality in Los Angeles. So now they're still lining up other cable providers throughout the country to offer the Marquee Network where you can see Cubs games. So in places like Des Moines, Iowa, where last year they couldn't see the Cubs, they've come to an agreement with Marquee, and now people in Iowa will be able to watch the Cubs on TV every game. Good for them. I didn't know they were being blacked out.
I have a friend who runs a restaurant pizza joint shop.
Yeah.
And I was talking to her this week, and she said it's going to, I think this was a month, it's going to cost an extra $600 a month.
For the pizza joint?
Right, because they have to pay per chair in the restaurant.
Yeah.
So
how
she's
about
like,
that?
we're going to, you know, not going to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, but see, that's interesting because I think a lot of people will choose their beer and burger based on whether or not they can watch the game.
Well, I don't think this isn't like a sports bar or anything like that. So,
no. I mean, because if you're a sports bar,
right,
it could be $6,000. You are paying for it.
Right, exactly.
You cannot not have that. Marquee, according to the Tribune, is pitching cable and satellite providers to insert their new network into the basic channel lineups. That would automatically add $4 to $9 monthly for the regional fee paid by Chicago area subscribers. That's you, according to sources close to the team. The new Cubs network will have 150 regular games, about 30 spring training games, and then all this other programming that they'll fill out. I don't know what they're putting on there in February or January, but they'll find something. It says here at the end of the article,
there was that game when Tuffy Rhodes hit 3 home runs.
I know.
I want to see that again.
I know. Do you want to see it 32 times? It's a 24-hour-a-day network. So the Cubs, I mean, you think it's hard to imagine that 24/7 trying to manage a radio station, a cable channel, whatever. You got to come up with more stuff every day. You've got baseball. That's good. But even in July, the games go about 4 hours, which is too long. And then you do an hour pre and post game. So let's look at the second inning again, Pat. And so you can do that, but you still have a 24-hour day.
I want to see that game when Brant Brown dropped the ball in Milwaukee.
Oh, no!
He dropped the ball.
Ron Sato's most famous call.
Don't say that about poor Ron. But it was.
Here's the end of the article. The Cubs also exited local over-the-air TV after 71 years, pulling the plug on Channel 9, Channel 7, and moving over 70 games between them over to Marquee this season and moving 70 games. So I wrote the author of the article back, Robert Chanik, and I said, okay, just to make sure I'm clear on this, if I have antenna, if I have an antenna on my house, and some of you do, I will see zero Cubs games. And he said, yeah, with the a few you will, but right, for all intents and purposes, if you don't have satellite or cable, you're just watching over-the-air television, you will not be able to watch the Cubs in Chicago. That's number one. Maybe you already knew that, but I just wanted to make sure I got that. And lastly, I said, if I choose not to subscribe to any local platform with the Cubs, but I've got the MLB app, will I still be able to watch them on my device that way? I mean, that's kind of a hack, isn't it? But I won't subscribe. I'll just get the app. I think the app's like $100 a year. Well, that's maybe the way you want to watch it. Some of you are already doing that anyway. And he said, I do not believe that the MLB app will work in the Chicago designated regional market. Major League Baseball defines Chicago's home broadcast territory as stretching across Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and parts of southern Wisconsin. And that's my understanding of it, too. So this is what happened in Los Angeles. They geofence the app. And if you're in the Los Angeles area, you say, that's okay, I've got the app on my phone, I'll watch the Dodgers game. It will not come up. You do not have access to it. They are that clever. Okay, I'm going to play a commercial for you. In fact, let's do this. Let's play a couple commercials for you here. We'll come back. And then I just want to get your reaction to the ad that the Chicago Teachers Union are running here in Chicago this week. It's their message after the strike. Your reaction to that's coming up. Your very own
WGN. Hi, I'm Dr. Bal Nandra from Ivy Solution and Ketamine Centers of Chicago. My clinic uses ketamine to conquer major depression, anxiety, and PTSD. Ketamine for depression has been described as the greatest advancement in mental health in over 50 years, with an up to 80% success rate and often immediate relief. Here's my patient, Antonio, who suffered for years from major depression and anxiety, describing how ketamine from Ivy Solution changed his life.
Prior to my going to see Dr. Nandra, I was unhappy, depressed, was a little bit lost. There was a lot of gray. It's like being in a swimming pool and not knowing which side to get out of. And then, you know, I spoke to Dr. Nandra and decided to go and start ketamine treatment. And things changed, like, shockingly fast. I feel like I got lucky because somebody said, here's a shortcut.
It's time you conquer your depression and anxiety. Call for your free consultation in Chicago or Kansas City. 844-9-IVY-MEDS. That's 844-948-6337. Or visit KetamineChicago.com. KetamineChicago.com.
John, I will not pay Sinclair or the Cubs one dime. Oh, yes, you will. 847 just texted in, hearing that description of how the Cubs still haven't come to a deal, or Marquee hasn't, with Comcast. If you have Comcast, that's the number one provider for TV in the Chicago area. They still don't have a deal. Now, maybe that'll happen. In fact, I bet the house that it will. I mean, good grief, what are you doing? You ain't got it on TV around here. I'll bet it'll happen. But some of you don't want to pay for that package. You say, I'm not doing it. I'll cut the cable. You're not going to cut the cable.
So who's got the power in that conversation?
I don't know. You're asking me,
is Comcast or Marquee?
Yeah.
It's got to be Marquee, don't you think?
I don't know. I don't know what the Cubs... I think the Cubs lost a lot of equity in this market. Right? I mean, not only did they not win last year, they played badly last year, and people were so ticked at them for most of the year.
Right, but Comcast will... Well, I'm assuming Comcast would lose more customers if it doesn't sign them than it would if it charges us exorbitant rates.
Well, they remind you that you've already been doing this. If you've got Fox Sports on your system, and you do, almost surely you do, there's an upcharge for that. You just didn't know about it. Somehow this feels different. I don't think people want to pay any extra. Folks are going, the pendulum is going the other way right now. So it's an interesting moment for those organizations. Hey, you can get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the whole WGN TV morning news team. That's weekdays from 4 to 10. And then there's this. You know, we all plan for things. Retirement, vacations, our kids' tuition. Makes sense to be prepared. What about funeral and cemetery plans? We know that we'll need them, but a lot of us don't want to think about it. Here in Chicago, your Compassionate Dignity Memorial providers can help. When you plan ahead, you can also make your own personal wishes known. Maybe your send-off includes your favorite music, an elaborate catered meal. maybe just a simple service filled with memories, family, and friends, whatever your wishes. The Dignity Memorial Pros throughout the Chicago area can help make sure your life celebration is just as you envision it. It's what they're known for. In fact, you can visit dignitychicago.com for ideas. They've got a funeral guide for you, an idea guide. Imagine that. But really, it's something that you don't want to think about. They have, and it's very helpful. So take a minute to learn more about peace of mind and making your wishes known at dignitychicago.com. I don't think we need to play all of it, but Elif, go ahead and start it. This is the Chicago Teachers Union message to you this week.
Our school!
We wanted to make things better in our schools and neighborhoods. So after months of unsuccessful negotiations, we walked out of our classrooms for our students. I'm Jesse Sharkey, president of the Chicago Teachers Union, the CTU.
And I'm Stacey Davis-Gates, vice president. With parents and community leaders by our side, we demanded more for public schools and the families who rely on them. We kept going until Chicago heard us. Our students deserve more.
Now we have a landmark contract that will make Chicago Public Schools more equitable and just, with smaller classes, more funding for librarians, special education, and community schools, and a social worker and nurse in every building every day.
So you get the idea. They go on to list all of the things that they acquired as a result of that strike. And a few of you have reached out to me today saying, I hope you talk about that today, John. Well, here's your chance. 312-981-7200. I don't have a problem with that. It's not tax dollars. It's the teachers' unions. Maybe you're a teacher and you'd appreciate them not spending the exorbitant rates we charge here at WGN. Actually, I think we're a real value. Ask the Joint Relief Institute. So I don't mind them spending their union dues on our radio station or any place else. It's your dues, and they've decided that a good use of that money is to talk back to the city. After a very long strike, it stretched through 3 weeks. It was 11 school days. And if we all went through that, it's probably a good idea to report back to us what the union take on it is. My great disappointment with the end of that whole strike was that the union heads decided that it was not in anybody's interest to stand with the mayor and the CEO of the Chicago Public Schools and shake hands, do some sort of ceremonial signing. I don't know what it would look like, but they were so dismissive of the notion. They were still so angry, even after they got enough to sign the deal, right? They got what they wanted, but they then said, but we're not going to go ahead and sit down and shake the mayor's hand. I was so disappointed in that. Okay, Jim, you're on WGN Radio. You go first. You're on the air. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, John?
Good.
John, I'm a retired teacher, 25 years, and I was on the picket line the last couple of weeks walking with my fellow teachers.
Yeah.
But I'm just totally against what they're doing, the commercials during the strike and the commercials after the strike.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, I paid over maybe $1,200 a union dues a year, and it's a political statement. I'm paying for them to represent the teachers in the classroom and not to be so political. And it really got too political, I thought, at the end there with Stacey Gates there and Jesse Sharkey. And I was very disappointing in that.
I'm glad you called, Jim. Thanks for joining us. Robert, you're next on WGN. Rob, what's your point on that? Hi.
Hey, John, good afternoon. While I support the teachers and for the kids and all that, what about the taxpayers? There's really no discussion about the taxpayers. Chicago's broke. Illinois is broke. The teachers are already very high paid to start with, and now they're going to be paid even more. It's really frustrating to me that no one's really talking about the taxpayers.
You know what that commercial doesn't say now that you mention it is, thank you, Illinois. Thank you, Chicago taxpayers, for honor the fact that we're all going to have to pay that freight now, right?
Absolutely. There's more taxes coming. Just wait.
That's an interesting observation. Hadn't thought about it that way. You folks got your thinking big thoughts hats on, don't you? Steve, more texts are pouring in. Okay, just one, but still. Somebody texted in about my wife's Texas caviar recipe.
I think I know what Texas caviar is, but what is it?
It's like kind of like a relish, but it's not relish. It's like beans, onions, peppers, vinegar oil kind of a thing.
So black-eyed peas.
Yes, that sort of stuff. So mm-hmm. It looks like this real healthy spread. It's not spread. It's everything. It's not mashed. It's the little beans and little diced onions and stuff.
I'm sure it tastes better than you're describing.
It does.
Yeah.
And then you dip into it with your chip, and then you put that in your mouth, and you go to a very good place when that happens.
And that's Texas caviar.
Texas caviar. And you'll have one of those. You go, okay, fine, I'll try your damn Texas caviar, John. And then you eat it, and then the next thing you know, you're face down in that thing. You can't stop eating that stuff.
If you ever invite me over, I'd try it.
Yeah. Kevin, have you ever had that Texas caviar?
Costco does a nice Texas caviar. I'm not sure if that's where it started, but I know which exactly what you're talking about. It's basically a bean salad. It's oils and some seasonings.
Don't call Brenda's Texas caviar a bean salad.
Bean salad is so much, pedestrian. Yeah. It's Texas caviar.
It's Texas caviar. But yeah, Costco does a nice Texas caviar. Probably not nearly as good as
I'm sure it's not. I hope it's not.
Yeah. How did you guys get on this topic? Sorry, I was cutting up some audio in here. I heard Texas caviar. Oh, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Texas caviar. It's a great dip situation.
Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Tribune, was in here, and he was taking questions from listeners, and somebody said, hey, what's the recipe in the old WGN radio cookbook for weenies and beans or pork and beans that Orion Samuelson had? And then I remembered that I delicately, you know, I wasn't sure that I wanted to share our Texas caviar recipe. Well, now it's gone mainstream. Somebody else texted in and said it's on Wikipedia, for crying out loud.
I used to have that cookbook.
I know.
Bet you I have it somewhere.
I need somebody to send me pictures of the pages of the old WGN Radio Family Cookbook, because that's where these recipes existed.
And you go back further, there was a Spike Odell Bite Your Butt Mustard Cookbook.
Yes, there was.
I had a nice seared scallop recipe in that one.
There were some really good recipes in these things.
It was mine.
As we're all getting ready for entertaining Thanksgiving and all the parties and all the holidays, some of these are good to have. Heck, the Tribune did a story today, and it was great side dishes. Great side dishes. A couple of last calls about the union commercial. The Chicago Teachers Union are running a commercial here and elsewhere saying, hey, everybody, here's what that strike got us. Better, you know, conditions in the classroom, librarians, aides, stuff like that. Mary, you're on WGN Radio. I was just wondering what your reaction to the ad was. Hi, Mary, you're on the air.
Hi, just agreeing with you, first of all, that there should have been some sort of thank you to CPS and Lori Lightfoot. And I found the ads kind of offensive. I'm not a teacher, but I'm glad they got what they wanted. But at the same time, it's interesting that they would spend money on ads when they don't have a strike fund. I would think that money would be better served to put into a strike fund, so that they wouldn't have to negotiate to be paid for the days that they're out on strike, which they ended up getting half of what they wanted anyway. So I didn't understand the ads either. I don't see people, you know, people gloating about that. I think is in bad taste, and not saying thank you. Hey, we finally came to, you know, an understanding, and it was, you know, hard fought and everything else, but not to say. You know, I don't know that I would go so far as to have a, you know, handshake public signing, but at the same time, I think somebody should have said, you know, thank you.
Yeah.
To the efforts of the mayor and the CPS.
And to taxpayers who are ultimately paying the price for this.
Absolutely.
And maybe a price that we all agree is worthy, but I mean, let's just call it what it is. You and I now have to pay those salaries, and it's going to come from somewhere. It's going to cost everybody a little more. Maybe we all agree that we should, but just own that fact. Just say thank you to the people that are going to pay it.
Exactly.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
You agreed with me. You may call anytime. John, you're on WGN. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. This is John, and I have a question. Where are all the little Johnnies and Marys these days?
Yeah.
I was a teacher for 35 years, then retired for 15, and I found the DTU's position very offensive, and the whole... It was unprofessional the way they dealt with the mayor and everything else. And most of my friends feel the same way.
Yeah. I think that strike brought up.
I spent a lot of time on strike lines, and I can tell you how many times there was a 16% offer on the table, and that would be zero. So that's the way I sat with several of my friends, former teachers, and they seem to feel the same way.
Yeah, I appreciate your phone call. Nobody should be gloating. I think that was the expression that the previous caller used, too. Thanks for the call, John. But They would not have been conspicuously absent had they not run the spot, right? I don't think people are all sitting there going, well, so what happened? We know what happened. How did the union feel about that? Well, this is the union head saying we think it was great. Maybe not all of the teachers who have prorated their salary for 5 days are thrilled with the fact that they've lost that much pay. I don't know what the feeling is out there, but I don't know that they had to run the spot. Hey, we'll take it. I'm a radio station. We run advertisements here. It's 2:39. This is WGN. One last thing about etiquette now. So with this season where people are going to be hosting and visiting people, you're going to be dropping in on somebody's house. There was one of these etiquette experts, and they were writing about how to be a good guest and how to be a good host. And there's some rules. And I was just wondering, we were going to mention this the other day when some news broke and we didn't get to it, but do you have any tales of bad guest behavior? Somebody cracked. Lauren Lapka's making a face now.
Oh, I have a great story.
So my number's 312-981-7200. Elif actually probably primed the pump on this in the office, too. How does yours go, Elif?
So one of my friends who lives out of town, I'm going to call her Hannah, had a friend of hers visiting named James, quote unquote, and he stayed for a long weekend, so like 4 or 5 days. Well, Hannah made him delicious meals with her boyfriend and drove James around, picked him up from the airport, and might have even dropped him off. He didn't bring a host gift, and he didn't contribute to any of the meals. And on the last day, they went out for donuts, and when Hannah saw James get his wallet out to pay, she told him to put it away just to be polite.
That's the dance we do. I've got it.
It's
no.
A dance.
And then you know he's going to say, no, I've got the donuts.
Exactly. He said that, but then he followed it up immediately with, you can just Venmo me later. So a few minutes later, not a matter of minutes later, he sent her a Venmo request, and he even verbalized that he sent it to her.
Hey, you still haven't got me for the donuts. Seriously.
Well, it was more like a, hey, just so you know, I sent you the Venmo request, but don't worry, like, take your time, but I did send it to you. I mean, you don't even have to tell her that then.
What are we talking about? Even the most expensive donuts in the world, Stan's Donuts.
They were $6. That's what Hannah said.
Okay, well then you should own six. You should eat $6, Jack. Come on.
Yeah, it's really not cool.
Brenda and I moved up to Minnesota. We were near the Mall of America. Friends were visiting us left and right, and it was nice to see them. But one couple came, and they brought a six-pack of beer, put it in the fridge. And I said, all right, well, some people bring wine, that they brought beer. Well, it was their favorite beer. It wasn't our favorite beer. A couple days later, when they went to leave, there were still some of those beers in the fridge, and they said, hey, we'll go ahead and take those beers with us. They grabbed the beers.
That is always weird.
They'll make more. You can buy more of your beers. All right, so what's your version of this, Lauren Lapka?
Okay, so this is actually both an etiquette story and a terrible first date story. This was shortly after I graduated college, and I was at home, living at home, and somebody that I knew from college wanted to take me out, so he came to pick me up. Just a little side note, he got sideswiped on the way downtown and didn't even bother to pull over or anything, so that was already a weird start.
So he pulls up with a dent in the car, just...
No, after he picked me up, shortly after, he got sideswiped while we were driving, heading downtown. But he didn't care. He was like, it's whatever. And he didn't pull over.
Keeps driving.
Yeah. So that was already weird. But the worst part of it is, you know, we have the dinner and whatever. He drives me back to drop me off. And he's like lingering. I was like, do you want to come in for a bit? Because I know he lives in Indiana. He comes in and he basically forces himself to spend the night at my parents' house. And I didn't want him there because I was like, I'm not really feeling it. So he forces himself to spend the night. And then in the morning, I wake up to him having coffee with my dad. And I just could not believe what I was experiencing.
Did your dad like him?
I honestly don't even remember asking.
They hang out
now? I was just
They're
so
like
amazed.
Best friends?
I was just so amazed.
Watching Sports Center in the
they
morning.
They look at you
and
go, well, maybe you shouldn't be here, Missy. We're getting along fine.
He had to have been so confused.
That's there's some chutzpah in a young man like that.
Right?
I'll crash at your place. I'll bet your dad and I will get along in the morning.
So weird.
I think the getting sideswiped part's really weird.
Yeah, that was even
just a scratch.
More strange. Yeah, it was so weird.
Got reservations at 7 o'clock. Don't want to wait with those pesky insurance companies. Hey, Becky, you're on WGN. What was your story, Becky?
Hi. We were invited to a surprise 50th birthday party. It was at a very high-end restaurant. When we got there, appetizers had been pre-ordered, all passed and very nice. Wines for the table had been pre-ordered. We were told to just order off the menu for this dinner. Again, it was about a party of 13, 14. And as we finished up, one of the couple that invited us walked around and said, okay, well, your portion is $250 or $200 cash. We were stunned. Luckily, we actually had the cash on us, but if you're going to pre-order alcohol and appetizers and things, the idea is that apparently, you know, you wanted a nice dinner and us to pay for it.
What was the premise for this? Was it, did you say a surprise party for somebody?
A surprise birthday party, yes, for someone.
And then they walk around with the bill? No, that's not how it goes.
Oh, we were stunned, and thank gosh we actually had that much cash on us.
Yeah, no
but
kidding.
Yeah, it'd be better to have us to a pizza party that you could afford than that's just beyond embarrassing. What if we didn't have the money? It would have been horrible.
Becky's winning. I don't know. Actually, I think it's a horse race. Thank you for the call, Becky.
Can I give you one more short one? Please. It's like my favorite story of all time.
What happened, Elif?
I thought I was on a date. He was acting flirty, and I wasn't sure if we were friends or just if we were on a date. And he Venmo'd me for half of the cost of the dinner, even though, because his birthday was coming up, I bought ice cream for him and I for our dessert. And I said, happy birthday. And then the next day, I got a $20 Venmo request.
So that was like, we're still friends. Is that what you mean?
I mean, sure, but also, how rude.
I mean, I've heard more and more stories like this.
Yeah, I read an article. I read articles. I don't have a life. But this whole Venmo business is very touchy terrain for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
What you're going through is just bad behavior, period. But then there's that awkward layer of digital money exchange, too. What were you saying, Kevin?
Even just like the first date thing, like, it's like I'm going to pay for the first date.
Was it only $20, Elif?
No, my half was $20.
Yeah, but I mean, come on.
I paid it, and then I never talked to him again.
Smart move.
I was like, take your money and leave.
Yeah, here's 21. Don't call, but yeah. Don't come back.
I should have asked him for the ice cream money.
312-981-7200 WGN. We're talking about guest etiquette, good behavior, bad behavior. I thought Kevin was going to tell us a story about him being a bad guest or hosting someone who is a bad guest.
Me? Why would you think I'd be a bad guest?
I don't, because you look like you were either smiling like, oh boy, I know somebody, or you look like that was a smile of recognition, like, oh yeah, I did that once.
Kev has a really good guest story. Do you know which one I'm talking about, Kev?
You don't have to
share the toilet one
with the whole class if you don't want to.
Wait, which one?
The toilet one.
Oh, but that wasn't like a date situation. That was just one of my...
No,
oh,
it's
okay.
About etiquette.
This is just about somebody's a guest.
Oh, yeah,
at your
okay,
place.
Here we go. I'll share this one.
Do I want to hear this?
It's not graphic or anything, but you'll get the gist of where I'm going with it.
Okay.
At the house I'm at, there's two bathrooms. There's one in the upstairs. Then, like, there's the main level kitchen family room. And then you'd go down, like, three stairs. It's not like your basement, but kind of like your game room. Hangout area, you know what I'm talking about. So down there, the bathroom was being gutted and redone. And we had a bunch of people over, and we have a pool table on there, and everybody was just getting kind of late, and drinks were flowing. John, you know where I'm going with this. So then one of our buddies all of a sudden emerges from the bathroom. We're like, what were you doing in there? I mean, it's completely gutted, John, bare bones. He goes, I was just going to the bathroom. What do you mean you're going to the bathroom? John, the toilet had been taken from the normal toilet spot where there's a hole where and moved because some work had been done.
Didn't you have a sign on the door too?
Well, did he not notice that there was no water or hole in the floor?
Or that it was like a cement floor and it was drywall and there was nothing in the bathroom?
This is not a functional commode.
Because we had to take the toilet off and kind of put it to their side and then,
Get out the power hose.
Good and times. Then you had to clean it.
Yeah, we had to. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wouldn't. It would have been worse if we're like, you got to take the toilet out. Who knows what he would have done with the toilet? So, yeah.
630 texted in and said, John, we invited new friends for dinner during the holidays. We cleaned the house. We put the decorations up. We took a lot of time determining what to serve and getting everything ready. The couple came, but they didn't sit down. They stood there, apologized, and said that they had friends that were visiting them. And so we're going to go back to our house with our other guests. Thanks anyway. And out they went.
You know what guests are interesting during the holidays are the ones where your cousin who went to college in Montana or some like obscure school brought home her boyfriend, and they don't really seem to do much except lay around the couch and make themselves at home. And everywhere you go, they just seem to be laying somewhere.
Yeah.
And when you ask them what they do, they're in between majors or in between jobs.
Right now, I'm just sitting on your sofa, Mr. Williams. That's kind of what I do now.
How's school?
Yeah.
Good.
Good.
In between majors,
just like
bro.
Good.
They kick their shoes off, no problem, throw them up on the couch.
Sit on their phone.
Mm-hmm. I described the people that took their beer back, and 219 said, my mother-in-law was like that with her meatloaf. She would bring the meatloaf, serve it, and then take the rest of it home. We had four kids. We could have used it. All right, Ellis, let's take line number four. That's Beth. You're on WGN. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I was wondering about the lady named Becky who called in saying that there was a surprise party at a very, very high-end restaurant, and the woman that arranged it came around and collected money from the guests. But my question is, did Becky think that the woman who arranged it was going to pay for everything?
Yes.
Why?
Okay, let's all do that. If I said, hey, Beth, I'm having a surprise party for Brenda, let's all meet at Osterio Vio Stato. They've got a great party room there, and we'll have a surprise party for Brenda. Do you come to that party thinking that you're going to have to pay for your dinner?
Absolutely.
I do not.
Yeah, you know what? She brought it up, I think I'm with her, John. Like, if everybody organized it together via email or text and said, okay, we're all going to meet up, and then so-and-so is going to be here at 9 o'clock. I would think everybody would be splitting it.
If I'm inviting you to my wife's surprise birthday party, I'm paying for the birthday party.
Oh, your wife's. Okay.
Well, I mean, does that matter? Okay, if it was just couples all arranging to meet there, but, right?
Shouldn't you be allowed to choose what you order then, if you're assuming that everybody's paying?
That's true.
Absolutely, sure. I guess, and the way to have handled that would have been for the woman arranging it to say, what do you say on an invitation? I'm not sure how.
Right, but it's a Dutch treat, or we'll all chip in and throw a great party.
Sure. And the other question I had, the lady that's there with you, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Lauren Lapka and LFR producer.
Lauren, yeah. Okay. And so the story about the college acquaintance that forced them to spend the night. I mean, I don't know how far away in Indiana he lived. That part was a little bit strange, but I didn't think it was strange that he was up drinking coffee with her dad. I thought that was kind of...
Well, yeah, when you fall asleep on the couch, for sure, you're... What else are you going to do in the morning? It was just such a strange sight because, you know, when you pretty much welcome yourself to fall asleep on someone's couch that you don't really know, that was definitely the weirdest part. And he lived close enough... And he didn't drink that much.
I was just going to say, right.
That, you know, I, in my opinion, you know, I would never advocate him driving home if I thought he was going to be putting someone or himself in a dangerous situation. So, yeah, it just seemed very forceful.
I still think the weird part of that story is you're driving down the road, you get sideswiped. He goes, we're good. Let's just keep
going. That's the weirdest
part. Yes.
We're good.
That's a guy who
doesn't have insurance. Or maybe a valid driver's license.
It was a really nice car.
We're out of time. It's 2:56. Beth, thanks for the call. Line 2 says that Texas caviar recipe is in the 2007 WGN cookbook that I may or may not share with you tomorrow. Come back to the show tomorrow and I'll let you know whether or not I got permission.